Hello and welcome to the Ordinary People's Theatre. I'm your host, Emma Sheehan. Sit back and relax with my short stories, mini soaps and the odd classic tale and something mysterious thrown in for good measure, all with a dark comic twist. I upload here on the first Monday of the month. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to my website, emmasheehan.co.uk, or find me on Instagram at emmasheehanlondon or Twitter at TheRealEmSheehan. And if you want to hear more episodes or find out more about the show, I'm on ordinarypeoplestheatre.buzzsprout.com. Enjoy the show. In His Dreams by Emma Sheehan. Awoke as his miserable, always furious cat Clyde inexplicably dug his razor claws into his shins. He saw that it was 6:40 a.m. on his ancient clock radio, only a few minutes before his alarm was due to gently wake him anyway. He'd set his alarm to a classic music station recently, as he thought it may lift his mood to be lulled serenely by, say, Vaughan Williams or some light Debussy, instead of a headachy shrill buzz. But no lark ascending was he, as he noticed with growing irritation that he was increasingly being woken by adverts for dental implants and cruises for old biddies. He attempted to stretch out in his single bed in the room he'd lived in all his life. Clyde hemmed him in at an awkward angle, so he curled into a small ball and pondered his dream. A dream of an inky black night, lit by a stark moon that silhouetted the edges of swaying palm trees, and him meandering barefoot in a crumpled linen suit through cooling sands to a jazz bar, appearing, he hoped, to any passerby, as a cross between Ian Fleming and Bogey in Casablanca. Slowly opening his eyes, a jag of anger passed through him as he saw the clock still read 6:40 a.m, as the blasted thing had given up the ghost. He stomped out of bed, cursing. Clyde managed to overtake him on the stairs and do one of his favourite zigzag movements, designed to give his master at least a little stumble at the bottom if he couldn't get him to fall completely. Gulping down a scalding coffee, Kenneth managed to wheel out of the house on his ancient bicycle 10 minutes later, straight into a freak downpour. On the day, he forgot his anorak. Arriving into the firm's car park, he was sent wobbling as Ian Howarth's Mondeo roared past him into the space nearest the door marked Managing Director. "Looking a tad damp there, Ken?" Howarth roared as he quickly eased into the building, as Kenneth dripped pathetically across the car park from the bike shed. For the past 34 years, Kenneth had been on the verge of leaving Turnbull and Churd. He'd only taken the job as a temporary measure after leaving Cambridge, depressed by the fact he'd never had that tap on the shoulder, just to tide himself over while applying to the security services. It had been bad enough when Ian Howarth had arrived in the 80s, the spotty photocopy boy, a mass of metal braces and mousy hair gelled into stupid spikes, sitting backwards on chairs and braying about a bird or a pool tournament or some laddish larks in Torremolinos. But it was actually getting disturbing, as this guy was now the boss, and Kenneth was still in the same seat, crunching the same numbers, counting the same filthy cash, while this idiot, at least brace and hairspike free, boomed on about laying some decking at the weekend or popping out to jet wash the Mrs. Audi. What a nonsense. What an injustice, Kenneth raged as he walked up the stairs, leaving small puddles. But he was here, still suffering, this fool. What about him and his dreams? He needed something to happen. He needed a change. He needed to change. He tried to edge past Howarth, who was now annoyingly standing by Kenneth's desk, laughing with a crony without being seen. But the man turned and shouted, "Any chance of a cuppa, Ken? A couple of Garibaldis won't go amiss either." He then bounded out of sight, whistling up the stairs to his office. Any chance of a cuppa? How dare he? But as he was a bit late with some paperwork, Kenneth thought it was best to comply with the request. Of all the liberties, asking him for a tea in the office like that. As the tea bag floated in the cup, Kenneth considered licking the Garibaldi, but managed to hold himself back. He wondered what Humphrey Bogart might have done in this situation. Not put up with it. That's what. The day dragged on in much the same vein, and Ian Howarth seemed to be picking on him and getting him to do menial tasks all day. He'd even been asked to jot some things down in the team meeting later on in that afternoon. Jot things down, indeed. The secretary, Helen Boltby, was at the meeting, all primed to take notes, so why the hell should he be doing her job? Kenneth looked at her as she came in and blew her nose too loudly and too long and sat down next to him, unsmiling. Her lips pursed in a way that reminded Kenneth of Clyde. Helen Boltby. Another disappointment to Kenneth. When the ancient faithful retainer, Miss Crown, hung up her typewriter after nearly half a century at the firm, Kenneth, along with all the others, awaited her replacement excitedly. He realised he had, as usual, got carried away as he'd pictured a new secretary, a wisecracking broad, tossing back a jet-black mane as she cackled, smoking seductively on the corner of a desk like Betty Davis, dashing off to assignments at a racetrack, or getting mixed up with local hoodlums, or having to be gallantly rescued. Quite how this would pan out at Turnbull and Churd on the one-way system, he hadn't really thought through. And sadly, Helen was neither dame nor doll, but a flat-faced skinny woman with a habit of wearing giant, inappropriate hair bows. Seething inwardly, as he noticed she hadn't even opened her notebook, he just pretended to jot things down as she smashed through umpteen Murray mints between honking into a tissue. He wondered what Clint Eastwood would do. Later on in the afternoon, as it was getting dark, Kenneth began to climb the stairs to Ian Howarth's office with some paperwork that needed signing. When his nemesis came hurtling past him down the stairs, swearing and shouting. He'd just spotted a traffic warden from the top window, ticketing his beloved Mondeo. The idiot had lazily parked in the blue badge disabled only spot instead of his own after popping out for a boozy lunch. And clearly lacking the required blue badge, he was receiving his just deserts. That brought the first smile of the day for Kenneth, and he felt a pleasant spring in his step as he entered Howell's office to wait for him. And there it was. The safe. It was wide open. Not just a crack, but wide open. A wide, smiling canyon. Kenneth smiled back. Leaning out of the window, he could see Howarth was now ranting in the car park below, shrieking at an amused traffic warden. Kenneth quickly darted back down to his cubbyhole, retrieved an old rucksack that had been living under his desk for about a year, and darted back to Ian Howarth's office. He then loaded 27 bags of cash from the smiling safe into his rucksack. Leaving his bike in the bike rack, he passed Ian and the now chuckling warden, and for the first time in his life, he hailed a cab in the street, like he was in a movie. In his excitement, he couldn't quite think which one it would be, but probably something stylish from the 60s or 70s. Did anyone get in a cab in the French Connection or the Day of the Jackal? He'd Google it later. Quickly home, he counted the cash. £79,000. Not too shabby. It was probably about what they owed him, really, he figured. He'd call it an early retirement present to himself. Or maybe an agro bonus for all the flack and nonsense he'd put up with toiling under the likes of Ian Howarth. It was mostly his fault, anyway. What an incompetent he turned out to be. At least he would get what was coming to him when this came to light. Chucking his passport, a toothbrush, and a change of undies into a small case, he was all set. That was all he needed for his new life. From now on, he'd be travelling light. He reckoned that Jimmy Cagney or Robert Mitchum probably wouldn't risk looking uncool dragging around a load of old tat, so neither would he. Lastly, before he jumped into the second taxi of the day, he scooped up a furious Clyde and deposited him in next door's yard with a tag around his neck that read, "Hungry, homeless, livid." By the next afternoon, Kenneth's white body lay gently pickling on a bamboo lounger as he clutched a cold beer in one hand and a battered Le Carré paperback in the other. Looking up from his book, he stared at the blue-green waves and the bleached sand. He adjusted his sunglasses and, smiling to himself, suspected he had more than a touch of Ray Winstone in Sexy Beast. No movie scenes came readily to mind. But that was okay, he thought, as reality would do just fine. For now. In His Dreams was written and narrated by Emma Sheehan. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you'll join me again on the first Monday of each month or at ordinarypeoplestheatre.brussbrout.com. Thanks for listening.